This meeting is now being recorded.
Hello, it's Margie.
Hi, Margie.
Hello, good morning, everyone. It's Jordan.
Good morning, Jordan. Jordan, I already have the recording started and paused, so when you are ready, let me know, and we will take it off pause and begin.
Okay, great. Looks like we've only got Megan, so we'll give it a few
minutes. Yeah, we got a few minutes. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Pamela, this is Stan.
Yep.
This is not the latest version of the trademark paper. I circulated one yesterday.
Okay. Let me bump back into my email and see what I've got. I'll be right back. Thank you, Stan. Sam, could you possibly?
Yes.
Could you possibly send me that revised version again? I don't have any emails from you yet, from yesterday, and I've checked all files.
I will do so, but I can talk through the changes. That's not a problem.
Okay.
I will do that right now.
Okie dokie, and I'll get that up as soon as I can. Thank you.
Hi.
Hey, Dan, is that you?
Hi. Hello. Yes, it's me.
Okay, great. All right, so now that Dan has joined, I think we probably got quorum. So, Pam, do you want to go ahead and resume the recording? All right. So, thanks, everyone, for joining this morning. As a reminder, you're here for the latest version of the CCT RT CCT subteam on competition and consumer choice. I'm your host, Jordan Buchanan, and we'll start off by seeing if anyone has revisions to their statements of interest. All right, in terms of an agenda today, I've suggested we discuss three of our quote-unquote papers, either actual papers in the form of or write-ups, pros write-ups in the Stance trademark paper, or templates that Dan and I have put together to discuss two other topics, and that's the issue of trademark registrations that Stan wrote up. Secondly, a related topic, which is duplicate registrations in GTLDs versus .com. And then finally, Dan's write-up of policy differences across various new GTLDs. And then at the end, assuming we have time, just I'd like to get a quick status update on where we are with some of the other write-ups that are in process. Does anyone else have any other agenda items they would like to add? Okay, so why don't we jump to Stan then? Stan's written up a nice prose write-up. And Stan, I don't know, looks like we still got the same version here, so maybe a helpful starting point would just be a quick summary of what you've done, obviously, and then the differences in the paper that you updated yesterday.
Yeah, I think as I've been, benefited from some useful comments on this from both Megan and David Taylor, and that's not reflected in the version that you see on the screen. And by the way, one thing that's very valuable about them, they were very specific and pointed comments, so they were easy to respond to, or at least in the sense that I knew what they were asking for, and that was helpful. Let me just sort of describe the two additions, because this is basically, you've seen this before. It just reports on the results that the analysis group presented in Vienna. Two issues came up. Megan raised the point that not all duplicate registrations are defensive. And the new version actually explains why you might want to duplicate registrations, even if it was not an issue of trademark protection. The basic argument being that in a world with lots of domains, being in more of them means you can be found more easily. So that points in. But at the same time, David, the question then arose, is there a need for defensive registration, as also raised by Megan, given the fact that that a trademark owner could protest the use of his trademark in another domain. And I think David made a very useful point that often, in his experience, duplicate registrations are cheaper than the dispute resolution mechanism. And so the new draft, it's only there are a few sentences that reflect that. And at least Megan seemed reasonably pleased with the response, with the revision. Dave, I haven't heard back from David. But that's the main difference between this version and there's more prose, if you like, no more data. One other thing I should say is that this still needs a verification from the analysis group, both in terms of the description of how the sample was selected and verification of the numbers that appear in the draft. But other than that, this is a work in progress, and I welcome any comments, particularly if they're specific and in writing.
All right, thanks. I have a couple questions and or comments.
Are they in writing?
Well, some of them are questions that may be helpful for discussion today.
Sure.
I really don't. We have a clash of civilizations in that I really don't like working in offline Word. So, whereas obviously my attempts to push you, Stan, into Google Docs has failed as well, so we'll have to figure out the best way to get it.
By the way, the comments I got from both Megan and David were in the form of emails. And,
okay, so that's probably...
They were sufficiently specific that I knew what they wanted to say, and I was able to take that and insert them in the document.
Sure. Okay, great. So that's probably the right approach then. But let me see if before I jump in, does anyone else have questions or comments for Stan on this write-up?
By the way, the new version is up on the screen.
Great. Thanks, Stan and Pam. All right. Since no one else has questions, I guess the first question I had, Stan, was I can't see anymore. Pam, can you make this scrollable for us? Thank you. The second study that you cite of the historical studies, I think, is the Strategies International study. Do you know, Stan, is that specific to trademarks, or is that just looking at duplicate registrations across biz and info and com?
It's duplicate. I believe, yes, that's correct.
Okay, so that may actually, I would argue, I guess, we may want to move the discussions of just non-trademark specific duplicates into the next topic that I worked on, which looks at exactly that issue that sort of like separates out the trademark from...
Actually, let me say one more thing.
Sure.
To some degree, the Nielsen study should have been helpful in sort of understanding better the motivations for duplicate registration. My reading of where they are, where they ended up, was that analysis will not help us sort of sort out who registers for essentially, you know, better search and who duplicates for trademark protection. But I may be wrong. If there are particular places in the Nielsen study that we can cite for that purpose, that would be very useful.
Agreed. I think, yes, I think it was going to be hard for us to get to either motivations or to look. I mean, one nice thing about the analysis group study that we're going to lack from basically every other bit of analysis that we do here is that they actually looked at compared registrants at least. So at least when we're looking at the data, we know it's the same, either the same registrant or not. It's still going to get some motives, but all these other data sets we're looking at, it's all we know is whether there's a duplicate registration, and it could be a totally, we don't even know if it's the same registrant, much less getting to the question of whether it's defensive or not.
Yeah, actually, I think you're raising a point, a writing point, which I can think about, which is, again, setting this up, I guess it should have, because this is written earlier, this eventually should be clearer on the identity of the registrant and where the name is duplicated, and that gets to your point, which is it a trademark issue or something else? And I agree with you. This could be restructured in a way that makes it more general at the outset and then specifically focuses on trademark. I think the only thing that really fits the trademark thing well is the AG study where the identity of the registrant appears.
Yeah, but at least some of these other studies you cite were restricted themselves to looking at trademarks, whereas it seems like in other cases they're just looking at general registration.
I agree. I'm going to go back and look at the Strategies International thing to look at it again. I've looked at it a while back, but good point.
Okay. My second question or thought is at the end where we talk about the sort of number of registrations per mark. So that's the very last sentence. I think we're still waiting from updated statistical data from analysis group, but it would be helpful to explain the difference between the median and the mean, I think, by pointing out that there's a small number of registrants registering a very large number of matches, whereas most trademark holders are registering a very small number.
Like the guy with 406.
Pardon?
Like the guy with 406.
Yeah, so we know that there's a max of 406, and I think what I asked analysis group to do is put together like a 95th percentile or, you know, something to sort of see what the sort of I think they're actually going to make a histogram. And so we can sort of see how that trails off.
I think the more general point is that they really ought to go through this and both vet the numbers and suggest other statistics that we might report.
Sure. Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to get to is a little bit more the sort of narrative around this as well, which is just like there is a small number of registrants of trademark holders that are registering a very large number of matches across many GTLDs, and then there's sort of the typical behavior, which is registering in 1, 2, 3, sort of up to 5 maybe. We'll have to see the histogram to see.
Point taken.
And then speaking of narrative, my last question is, so you conclude your opening paragraph with, nevertheless, it appears that defensive registrations is a significant phenomenon. And I'm wondering, is significant here intended to be, like, in the statistical sense of the word, or, like, because I sort of look at this data, and maybe it's just because, Stan, I was around before the program launched and listened to the rhetoric at the time, where people were talking about how it would cost trademark holders tens of millions of dollars to register all of the sort of in all of the TLDs that they would have to and so on. And I see what's actually happening, and like I just said, most people are registering, you know, in three TLDs. And I sort of view this as like, it's happening, but it's not, doesn't seem to be like a very large fraction of the overall registration volume.
I wrote this yesterday in response to what David Taylor sent, and I'm not sure he would agree with the characterization.
All right, so we just may need to tweak the wordsmith that.
In fact, I'd be very interested. He's the person apparently on this committee who I think has the most experience with this, and I sent this back to him, but I haven't gotten a response from him about whether this accurately reflects what his email to me says.
Okay, great. So I guess we can continue to tweak language based on feedback from David and others. All right, those are my questions. Does anyone else have any other questions for Stan?
Hey, Jordan, this is Elisa. I do.
Yeah, go ahead, Elisa.
Actually, not so much a question. You guys were just talking about whether the registrant survey asked why people were registering duplicate names, and I was looking through the report. I didn't see it included in the report, but I knew that we asked that question. I found it in our data table, and the way the question was asked, it was a select all that apply. So I can also send you the relevant slide, but just in short, it's about 52% said to help ensure my site gets found in searches, 51% to protect my brand or organization name, another 51% to keep someone else from having a similar name. And then it drops off from there. 31% is for use in different geographies. 27% is for future potential use or sale in the future. And then 1% said other. So about half are talking about either protecting their name or you know, hoping that it'll come up in searches.
That's actually a good idea. I think that will be a good sort of that could go after the material that's been written here. But if we can cite the Nielsen survey, we should. So I appreciate that. And when you send it to me, the next version you see will include some references to that.
Great. I'll send you the relevant slide.
Great. Thanks, Elisa.
Sure.
All right. Anyone else have questions or comments for Stan? Okay, why don't we move on to the next write-up then?
Rafa had a question in the chat. Oh.
Yes, this is the last sentence on the first paragraph, based on some data. What data? And I think Stan's already clarified this. This is him attempting to capture the sentiment that David put in email yesterday. So we're going to first see David's reaction, and then I think we can all suggest some I think that will be the most controversial sentence in this write-up. So hopefully we can get.
He was very clear on the point, which I think makes good sense to me, which is if protecting your mark through essentially a legal or quasi-legal process is expensive, that might explain why you would choose registration in more than one domain. That argument seems to me to make sense, and he certainly has experience with clients for whom that's a relevant consideration.
Yeah, so I think it is probably correct to say that there is, you know, it is certainly the case some amount of defensive registration is happening. I think all of the questions going to be around, you know, what does that word significant mean, and is that the right word?
And the word many.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, yes. So we'll have to, you know, get the right language to make sure that we're characterizing this in a way that people don't read too much into. And, you know, we have the data to actually say what it says. But, you know, it is obviously the case, and I think David's point makes sense, that some registrants will choose to register defensively to avoid the need to engage in dispute proceedings. And it seems like some other registrants may choose to go in the other direction. So it's probably just worth. One other thing that we should marry this to that is not in our remit, but hopefully the other sub-team is working on, so I'll follow up with Laureen, is has the number of disputes increased as the result of the introduction of new GTLDs? Because David asserted in his email that they have seen a large cost to registrants who don't engage in defensive registrations. So it'd be good to see whether or not that's actually substantiated by the data, and presumably we can get that.
I do have one more question. What is the status of the project that you're doing, Jordan, the Matching Strings project?
We're about to talk about that.
Okay.
And then Jonathan correctly points out on chat that one thing that we're not capturing here is some registries offer a defensive-only product, which is a blocking product, where you buy not a registration, but the ability to prevent other people from registering the name. Donuts, for example, has a product that you can pay them one time and then receive a block across all of their, like, 200-ish TLDs. And that won't show
that
up.
That actually is useful. Could somebody send me a site to that, or even better, some language?
Maybe. Jonathan, I probably could, but Jonathan brought it up. I'm hoping he can point you at an example.
About blocking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me look into that, Stan, and I'll see if I can point you to some sources. Like I said, I don't know if I've seen anything that looks like data in that respect, but we do know that it's something that a number of registries have been offering. And I think it began with XXX, actually, was the ability to, an alternative defensive registration is just saying, please block this domain so that no one can register it, and it's cheaper than doing an actual registration. I don't know the closest thing we'll have to data is probably going to come from the INTA survey of mark holders.
No, I don't think I need data. I think this sounds like a very good point. And what I would propose is simply, you know, if there were like a trade press article on it, we could make
right.
A point.
Okay, I'll take a look and I'll get something to you, Stan. I'm on it.
So this is Jimmy. Stan, can I just say two things about that? One which is obvious, which is that that is obviously a voluntary program. It's not a requirement for registries to offer. The other is that it grew out of, in part anyway, it grew out in of the fact that there is no externally existing list of globally protected marks. So marks that are registered all over the world. So, you know, for example, Apple is probably registered virtually all over the world, but there may be other Apple trademark owners that are legitimate and not related to Apple. So because ICANN and the community could not point to some ISO list, if you will, of global marks, then we weren't able to do a globally protected mark list, which is what I understand this is largely used for. The other thing is that the registries that do this on a voluntary basis also have, I think, a procedure for other valid trademark owners to contest the blocking. So,
I guess let me say two things. First place, I like Jonathan's point because we now have sort of three things that a trademark owner can do. We only had two here. Well, I like that. That's it's a more it's more accurate. By adding that, there'll be a more accurate description of the range of alternatives available to a trademark owner, number one. And let me make the general point, which is I think by writing this down, I think the comments are more focused. And that's why I continue to argue that that getting things on paper sooner rather than later is a good thing.
No, I agree 100%, and I'm not objecting to including this. It's just that it's a it's a more complicated thing than just you have the option to to block rather than to register.
I will try to be as accurate as I can.
Okay. Thanks for that update. Dan's got his hand raised, so go ahead, Dan. We can't hear you if you're trying to speak. Okay, I'm not hearing Dan, so...
Hear me now?
Yep, thanks, Dan.
Regarding this, Jamie mentioned, that's definitely there's no such a thing as a list of trademark around the world. All the trademarks must be registered local, and if registry has for list of all locals, the local trademarks, it also won't be useful because the countries are part of some treaties and there we. Also impossible to have a complete list of local trademarks. So that's completely impossible to have that kind of list. Just to add something.
Thanks, Dan. And just for context for those who have been following this a little less long, there was discussion leading up to the introduction of the 2012 round, whereby it was posited by some people that it might be possible to have, I think what Jamie called a globally protected mark list. So essentially these brands are so famous that we should just block them across all TLDs. And I think for the reasons that Jamie and Dan have just cited, I think the community decided it wasn't actually possible to build such a list. So Donuts and others and XXX have sort of on the innovation side of the equation have decided that they will sort of provide mark holders with this capability despite the fact that ICANN wasn't able to come to some determination about it. I will note there's a difference in that these products that registries are offering aren't limited to famous global brands. I think any trademark in the TMCH is generally eligible. Although Jamie's right that in some cases if you have your own conflicting mark or generic use of the term, you can sort of petition to use the domain. So the block is not 100%, I don't think. In any case, some of that's probably covered in the documentation that Jonathan and I have pointed to in chat. So hopefully that will give Stan something to chew on and add to the write-up. All right. So now I'm going to move on to our second paper, second template. So this is the write-up I did. This is a summary of work that ICANN did to look to see what the sort of rate of identical registrations were in the second level in the new gTLDs versus .com. So we ended up looking at two things, the first of which was how common is it that the exact second level domain registered in a new gTLD was also registered in .com. So in the case of in the case of, we'll use Jonathan's registration example again because we'd like to, bigshot.photography. How often was it the case that bigshot.com was already taken? And then we asked the second question, which is, and so that would roughly tell us.
Jordan?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Jonathan.
Jonathan, I think it's not that bigshots.com was available, but that bigshotsphotography.com was available.
Right, so we actually, so that's the second point I was going to get to. We actually looked
question.
At both of these things. And so I think they're answering slightly different questions, but they're related. So we first asked, is bigshot.com available? And then the second question we asked is, all right, well, so assuming it's the case that a lot of times there's just going to be common words registered at the second level, both in .com and in the new GTLDs, how often was it the case that the entire string that the registrant got was available in .com. And so in that case, how often was the case that if someone registered bigshot.photography, was it the case that instead they could have registered bigshotphotography.com? And so what we found was sort of a tale of, like, pretty different answers depending on which of those questions you ask. So in the case of, Big Shots, Big Shots, if Jonathan had registered bigshots.photography, and we looked to see whether bigshots.com was registered, it looks like the data says 92% of the time or the inverse of this, 82% of, all right, let's make this sentence again so it's less confusing. If someone registers bigshots.photography, 82% of the time, the equivalent.com, bigshots.com, would have also been registered. So most, the significant majority of new GTLD registrations are second-level domains that are also registered in .com as an exact match. But then if we take a look at the longer string, if we look at bigshots.photography and say, is bigshotsphotography.com available, in most cases, in 92% of cases, you could have registered that exact string in .com because it was available. Does that make sense to everyone? Let me stop there and see if people have questions because it's all slightly confusing. Okay, no one has questions. All right, so I will add the one exception to this general finding is that in the IDN TLDs, it was much more likely that unique second-level domains were being registered. And so, for example, in several of the IDN TLDs, 60% or more of the second-level registrations were unique, and they didn't exist in .com. Now, presumably this is because these are in a script or language other than Latin, and so there's less incentive to register these things in .com, whereas they may make total sense in whatever language the IDN is registered in. It looked like, from my analysis, that the top three IDNs for unique TLDs, one was an Indian subcontinent language, I believe, and the other two were Cyrillic Russian, Moscow, and I think the short version of Russia in Cyrillic. So in those other scripts, at least, it was more likely that people registered unique scripts. And overall, in the new GTLDs, as opposed to 82% of the names already being registered in .com, only 70% were already registered in .com in IDNs. So I went on and tried to summarize a few hypothetical causes. The first thing I said is that in some cases, in at least 18% of cases, users register in new GTLDs, even though they could have gotten the exact same SLD even in .com. But much more commonly, I think there's a lot of common words registered in both. So we do see quite a bit of overlap between the two. But it's very interesting to note that in most cases, in the significant majority of cases, the user could have registered a .com name with the exact same overall string that they ended up registering in the new GTLDs. Now, the one thing this doesn't tell us is, presented with a choice between a new GTLD and .com, we know that everyone in new GTLDs chose a new GTLD because they registered in a new GTLD. So we have a selection bias problem. And so what I've asked ICANN to do, and we're going back and forth figuring out exactly how to do it because Elisa just sent a note, is what if we turn it around and look at the strings that were registered in .com and could have been registered in a new GTLD as an exact match, and to see how common those are. And then that, I think if we see that there are, I don't know, we'll see, are there more of those, less of those? But we know at least that most of the registrants in the new GTLDs could have registered bigshotsphotography.com or its equivalent and chose for whatever reason to register bigshots.photography. So I think that's something interesting about non-price competition and consumer choice. All right, any questions or thoughts about that? Okay, I guess I'll ask the last thing I'll add is that unlike Stan's, the analysis group study on trademarks, where there is duplication, we have no idea whether it's the same registrant or a different registrant. And so we don't know if these are just, you know, different people trying to use the same string or someone registering multiple TLDs because they already have the name in .com or someone trying to speculate, you know, someone trying to take advantage of the fact that it's already registered in .com for some bad intent. We can't tell at all the difference between those three possible use cases. And that's probably something I think I flagged that would be useful to do as a follow-up study in a future review. Okay. If there's no other discussion here, we can move on. Lotto's typing this. I'll give him 1 second to... Oh, Stan, go. Stan's hand came up and went down. Feel free to jump in if you have a question, Stan. Otherwise...
Yeah, Jordan, I'm sorry to be going a little bit backwards, but in response to Jonathan's point, I actually found an article by an attorney at Dorsen & Whitney that, in fact, describes the blocking service as well as other... It basically gives 5 strategies for someone protecting their trademark. So that might be a source for the data that we talked about earlier.
Thanks, Stan. Sounds interesting. What else, is there a way to tie the preference of registrars with preference by consumers? Not sure what that means. What is still typing, though? Anyone else know what that means? Oh, so for example, it appears that most consumers prefer Netflix.com to Netflix.netflix. So this would be an interesting question to look back at the Nielsen consumer survey. We obviously see that there's some less trust and so on for the new GTLDs compared to the legacy GTLDs, and in particular .com. But I don't know if we'd be able to quantify. The interesting question is if someone's trying to buy Big Shots is the name of your company, and you start off and your intent is you want to get bigshots.com, that's not available. You could maybe get bigshots.photography. You could also get bigshotsphotography.com. Your first choice isn't available, so what's your second choice behavior going to lead to? I mean, the really interesting thing to me are the 18% of people who could have, like, 100, like, you know, they could have gotten it in .com. They didn't even face this choice. They just went and got a name in a new gtld despite its availability in .com. So at least some of the time that's happening, but it's definitely the less common option. All right, I don't see any other discussion, so I'm going to move on to our third write-up today, which is Dan's write-up of registry policies. And I apologize, Dan had sent it to me last week, which somehow slipped through the gaps in my mailbox, and so I didn't respond to him till yesterday, so you all just got this last night. So, Dan, it might be helpful just to run us through the high-level summary for those that haven't had a chance to review it yet.
Yeah, sure. This researching is including the top 30 in the new GTLD. It's based on table prepared by Eichenstadt, Lisa, and her team, and it was circulated to the list between the DC meeting and Vienna meeting. So based on that table, I use our template and find some, in order to find some conclusions. Topics are listed in the three categories. First one is privacy, another one general policy, and the third one is related to PICS. Within the first topic, related to privacy, I find that most of the GTLDs has published privacy policy, 90% of them. Generally, they have some data protection provided. Just few of them are very concrete that they have right to sell private data. Related to general policy, one of the questions was related to a local presence, and I find that only New York City has that requirement. The other GTLDs has open system and everyone can register that domain name. Regarding to PICS, 73% of them has some PICS to implement, and this part of researching has been must be a little bit more developed. So I'll continue working on that, especially on this third part in the next period. Related to causes, generally almost all these companies are included previously in domain name business, so they have some experience and develop policies. But the one part also was the part of accreditation process, so it was prescribed by ICANN, so they that's some things related to policy they must include in that, especially in related with HUIT. So that's in short my findings.
Okay, thanks, Dan. Any questions or comments for Dan? So I guess I've got one. So Dan, made some attempt to differentiate or sort of describe the range of policies. I guess one of the original premises that we were trying to get at here was whether this had any effect on consumer choice, or I guess it has an effect on consumer choice, but whether it had an effect on competition as well. I guess my question is, like, does it make sense? Do you see enough difference in the policies that it would make sense to look and somehow try to measure the success of the TLD relative to the policies, or do you think that they're all sort of similar enough that it's not worth digging into whether there's a competitive effect or not?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. Maybe we should try to dig a little bit deeper and try to find it there necessary to include that question, but I don't have an answer on that right now.
Okay, thanks. I think Megan says in chat that she wonders what the impact is, and I guess is agreeing with my question roughly. Aliza's got her hand raised, so I will turn it over to her.
Hi, thanks. So I had a suggestion, and this was a conversation we had with the safeguards team as well, on how you might be able to test the impact of this on more from the computer, sorry, from the consumer side than from maybe competition between registries, but whether it impacted how consumers make their decisions. So, for example, you could try registering a name like CCT Review and see what you're presented with and if the consumer is kind of aware of the differences between the different TLDs. It might be kind of a way to test, you know, what they can read and see.
And so, Aliza, are you saying like that would be just something we would manually do, or we would get consumers to do somehow?
Something you would do yourselves and write up the results of what you saw when you went through the registration process of trying to register in different TLDs.
Go ahead, Dan.
I think that is very useful to include in this part of research. How difficult, how easy is to register the domain name.
It's not so much about the registering of the names, but the experience you have. So if you see the difference between the TLDs, and presumably as a registrant, you may be interested in the different restrictions around the TLD in which you're registering. So again, this is more from the consumer angle than from a competition angle.
Yeah, so I guess just to help me understand, Aliza, the methodology that you guys use to put together the tables that Dan's working off in the first place.
Sure.
I thought you guys did roughly that already, but were you looking at something other than the registration experience to pull together the information?
We went directly to each of the registry's websites and looked for their user policies. It wasn't, you know, via a registrar or via trying to register a name.
Right. Okay.
So this shows you what the policies are. What I'm suggesting is what's the consumer experience, and if you are interested in this policy, how would you come across it?
Yeah, I will make a comment only somewhat substantiated by data, but based on the registrars I'm aware of, I believe this is going to be a relatively uninteresting experiment in that most registrars just have like a giant page with all the registry policies on them. And so you would go through and basically it would say like, oh, you agreed to all the policies, and if you click on the link, then it would take you to a giant page that, you know, you could read through to read the policies, but they wouldn't be particularly distinguished from any other registry. Like, I don't think there's like a summary table or something like that, or I don't think there's a particular call out to that particular registry's policy, probably with the exception of .nyc, which Dan's already flagged, has a nexus requirement, so you actually have to pay attention to it during the registration process, or you're not able to get the name in the first place.
Right, and I think that might be interesting to note, is that unless you are specifically interested in the policies or want to see what the differences are, you would have to be going directly to the registry's website, otherwise you won't be confronted with what these differences are. Maybe it's not important to consumers. But it's just a kind of another way of coming at the question. I don't think that you're going to get a huge funding out of it either, but it's a suggestion.
Yeah, so, I guess that makes sense. Dan, if you have time and want to explore that route, I guess it makes sense to try to consider it. I certainly know what the experience would be like on Google domains, and it wouldn't be differentiated between the TLDs. But I imagine there's other, it's probably worth looking at some other registrars as well, and I see Jonathan is looking at Network Solutions right now, so that's another opportunity. To loop back to my question for a moment, Dan, maybe the useful thing to do would be for you to identify the, you know, one, two, three, however many it is, places where you see the biggest differences in policies, and then we could look to see whether we see any competitive difference with those big differences in policies, and I guess act under the assumption that if the smaller differences in policies are going to have a smaller effect, even though we're not actually testing that.
Okay. Well, I'll do it. Find if there's any differences worth to mention in the report. Okay.
All right, great. Any other questions or comments for Dan? All right. So we've talked through those three formal elements of our agenda. So we have 10 more minutes to talk a little bit about next steps. And then Megan just asked whether it's useful to compare ccTLD policy with gTLD in this respect before we jump ahead. I'm not sure the answer. I don't want to try to answer that question. I think we may have a data problem in that, Aliza, the ICANN effort didn't take a look at any ccTLD policies. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
No. CCTLDs are not included in the table.
Right. So someone would have to do a bunch of extra work to gather that policy information if we were to try to conduct that comparison. And I think we're, my inclination is to say we're late enough in this process that it's going to be hard to add it. I mean, I get the impression at least that this was a lot of work to put together in the first place. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it took some time to go through and read each of the policies and categorize them. I think we could certainly do it for ccTLDs, but I think we would need some help, obviously, with the definition of which ccTLDs you would want to look at for sort of a fair comparison. Would it be the really big ones, only those that are open to registrations? It would kind of depend on what you're looking for.
So maybe I'd suggest Megan and Dan and Aliza, if you guys want to chat a little bit offline and see if we can define a scope that we think is manageable. Because this is late and this is a fair amount of work, so we want to make sure that we would actually be able to get the data to be able to do an apples-to-apples comparison.
Sure, I'll write to Megan and Dan about that.
Okay, great. All right, now we have 8 minutes to talk about next steps.
I have a short comment. You're right.
Go ahead, Dan.
For ccTLDs, policies are generally available. It's very easy to find. But the question is what you want to compare. Because definitely it's different with who is policy. ccTLDs has their own WHOIS policies, and ICANN has general policy for GTLDs, and that's the difference for sure that I know about it without looking. But the question is what we are want to compare, the privacy or general policy or some questions mentioned in this finding.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. I think that would be useful to be part of the discussion with Megan and Aliza to see. We probably want to be comparing consistent things. If we're looking at differences across GTLDs, we may want to look at the same things to see if there's differences across CCTLDs, even acknowledging, and maybe this is just something we call out in the report, that because the CCTLDs aren't constrained by the GTLD ICANN agreement, there's actually much wider possibility for variance. So GTLD can't just decide that it wants to change the what it does with who is because it's constrained by the contract with ICANN, whereas a CCTLD, according to however its governance model works, could just decide that, you know, it didn't want to provide who is at all, or it was only going to provide it to people that paid $1,000 or proof that they were, you know, had a good use for it or something. So, that is a big difference, but it might be more something to caveat with than to try to dig into, just because we can't make that comparison across GTLDs.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. 5 minutes to talk about next steps. So, in terms of next steps, as a first matter, it seems like we've got some minor refinement to do on Stan's paper, but we have some concrete next steps there. Obviously, people send suggestions to Stan if you have any. I'm definitely open to feedback on my write-up as well, but those two both seem like they're probably in good shape to present to the broader group as soon as we get those follow-up refinements. And then, Dan, depending, I guess, on where your conversations with Megan and Aliza land and your own follow-up, we may be in a position to present your document as well in the near future. But I'd like to bring some of this forward to the plenary call next week. So I'll coordinate with Dan and see if we think we're ready to do that with his paper, but the other two probably will be ready at least. In addition to that, as we discussed on last week's plenary, I'm hoping to start to pull together a high-level PROS framework for the entire document in parallel to some of these write-ups to see how the parts start to fit together. And I hope to have a start at that by the next plenary call. I'm kind of swamped the rest of this week, so it'll probably come early next week if we get to that. So expect to see that soon as well. And then we have a few different outstanding projects that I just wanted to check in on. Hopefully we can discuss at our next call in 2 weeks. And those are, where's our project tracker? I think, Wodo, we're waiting from you the registrar competition within registries effort. And then also the use of the .brand TLDs. Do you think you'll be able to discuss those in 2 weeks? I will follow up with Wodo offline since we don't seem to have direct response from
George.
Yes, Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, what you just said to Wodo reminded me there is a placeholder in what I think of as the industry structure piece that has a table that I guess we're asking AG to fill in, which basically is supposed to report effectively the number of registrars for each domain and a frequency distribution of that. Does that overlap with what Wodo is doing?
Yes. I mean, in that he, I think, was going to look at some of the price competition that presumably, I think, one of the hypotheses is that more registrars for a particular TLD will result in better or less markup for that TLD.
I guess, and AG has done some stuff on that already, correct?
Right. Yeah. So that's what I think Wodo was intending to write up.
Okay. So mine is more the sort of industry structure side. We can use data from NCLD stats and just essentially compile some, having some idea of, you know, how many of the new registries have, you know, five or fewer registrars, and how many have, you know, more than 100, that sort of thing.
Right.
If you like, it's the right-hand side variables in the regression AG is doing or has done.
Yeah, that's right. The one thing I worry about a little bit, just using them for one side and NCLD stats for the other, is making sure our numbers agree on both sides of the equation.
No, NCLD stats. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just think NCLD stats is convenient because they actually, I know they have exactly the data. If they have another source, that's fine.
Yeah, I just I think we're already going to have this problem in a few places, but I'd like to avoid the number of places where we say, TLDX has Y registrars, and then in another part of the report we say TLDX has Z registrars.
I guess my only point is that this, if they have the data, that's fine. But this project should not be held up because of the absence of data, because the backup is always NTLD stats.
Right. Yeah. So maybe Lisa, we could just ask AG to look at the chart in Stan's paper and see whether that's already addressable with the work that they put together on registrar concentration and price data. All right. And we're out of time.
I think they only did that, Jordan. I think they only did it for a sample of registries.
Right. So that's right. So it may not be possible. And then, you know, like I said, I think we're going to have situations where we just have to use different data sources, so there will be some disagreement in the final numbers. But, to the extent we can double-check with them and see whether we can synchronize it would be useful. All right. We are out of time, so I'll follow up with the remaining task items offline. And we'll hope to line up an agenda for additional items to discuss on our next call in 2 weeks. All right. So for now, thanks, everyone, and we'll see you at the plenary call next week.
Thanks, Jordan. Do you want to try to do a separate call to talk about this overview thing?